special episode.
Big collaboration between
Tiny Expeditions from the Hudson Alpha Institute for Biotechnology
and Genome Insider from the Joint Genome Institute. Like many good ones, this story starts in a greenhouse.
Okay, so sunny and warm?
Yeah, and this is a specific greenhouse, one that I went to in Albany, California, just northwest of Berkeley. It's a rooftop greenhouse where researchers grow plants for their work with the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Oh, official.
Exactly. And I want to point out one kind of tree growing in this greenhouse. It's the rubber tree, a species called Hevea brasiliensis.
So this is the tree where we get rubber for tires, rubber gloves, and also rubber boots.
And there are about a dozen rubber trees here in this greenhouse. They're around 6 feet tall, with big football-shaped leaves the size of your hand. And up and down their slim, tan trunks are diagonal slashes.
In that pattern, it's not part of their bark.
Right, growers cut those slashes. This is the first step in making rubber. It's called tapping a rubber tree, a little like tapping a maple tree for sap to make maple syrup. But when you tap a rubber tree, liquid latex drains out of the bark.
So you collect that liquid, then process it into rubber. The trees are in the greenhouse for studies.
Yeah, but the rubber trees aren't our main event. They're here for comparative experiments with the plant that's really the star of the show, because it makes rubber too.
A spotlight-stealing shrub, Parthenium argentatum.
And this shrub's common name is Waiuli. It's a more sustainable, climate-resilient plant, and researchers are betting that one day this shrub could give the rubber tree a bit of a run for its money. So next door to those rubber trees, this greenhouse has another room. It's full of these Waiuli shrubs.
This is a special episode of Tiny Expeditions from the Hudson Alpha Institute for Biotechnology.
And Genome Insider from the Joint Genome Institute.
I'm Dr. Sarah Sharman.
And I'm Mainika Wilhelm. The JGI and Hudson Alpha work together on lots of projects,
including this one. So we've teamed up for this episode.
It's the story of the researchers who are working to make a shrubbier version of rubber.
Because that shrub just might grow better in our warming world.
And it could be a useful crop in multiple ways. Researchers are hoping to harvest rubber from its stems, then convert what's left over into other chemicals and fuels.
So we'll meet a few of the people behind that project. There's a full team of researchers working with the JGI and Hudson Alpha on this.
Yep, they're from the Boyce Thompson Institute at Cornell University, Bridgestone, New Mexico State University, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And they're all very interested in this Waiuli shrub.
So first, let's start with why we need more sources of rubber.
To be clear, there are two different kinds of rubber in our world.
There's synthetic rubber,
made from petroleum,
and natural rubber,
which comes from plants.
Synthetic rubber works well for a lot of things, but for durability, natural rubber wins out. It's stronger and more resilient against wear. A lot of stuff in our world depends on it. I heard about this from Dave Dierig. He's a plant geneticist working on this project at Bridgestone, as in Bridgestone tires.
So most tires, anything larger than a car tire, has a high percent of natural rubber in it. Airplane tires are all natural rubber because synthetic rubber really can't do the same things that natural rubber does.
As one example, natural rubber stays flexible even at low temperatures. That's why it's key for airplane tires. They see a big temperature range. But there's a pretty big problem with natural rubber.
Almost all natural rubber comes from just one species of tree.
Hevea brasiliensis, that species you saw in the USDA greenhouse.
It's a tree that provides a bunch of rubber, but it's also a tree that's in trouble.
For starters, rubber trees are all genetically identical. They're like banana trees. They're all clones.
So we're concerned about all the risks that natural rubber plantations have right now with diseases. You know, it's a tree, it's a clonal crop.
On a rubber tree plantation, every single tree has the same defenses against disease. If a tough fungus comes through, it can wipe out an entire plot of trees at once.
And that's happened.
Yeah. So rubber trees are native to Brazil, but they really don't grow there anymore. A disease called South American leaf blight has pretty much squashed commercial rubber production in South America. So now, most commercial rubber grows in Southeastern Asia. There, it's safe from disease, for now, but it's not safe from other issues.
Climate change is another issue that we're worried about.
Climate change is making both droughts and floods more extreme.
both are bad news for rubber trees.
And Dave pointed out one more risk.
Labor shortages, because you have to go around to each tree on a daily basis and tap the tree to get the rubber out. So it's very labor intensive.
So yeah, the rubber trees are in a bit of a pickle.
But natural rubber is hugely important for lots of industries, so Dave is looking elsewhere.
Every tire company is looking for some kind of alternate source or supplemental source of natural rubber.
And we've made rubber at scale from other plants before.
Because actually, lots of plants make rubber.
There's some rubber in sunflower leaves and lettuce, and of course, there's a shrub that makes a lot of rubber that's also high quality.
Enter Guayule.
That's Guayule.
Pronounced Guayule.
The shrub that makes rubber.
If we're being honest, when you see Guayule, it looks a bit forgettable.
Truly, it's a very shrubby desert plant. A lot of people describe it as tumbleweedy. It grows about a foot or so off the ground with little sage green leaves.
It's not particularly showy. Even the flowers don't really look like much.
Andrew Nelson is a plant biologist at the Boyce Thompson Institute at Cornell University. He's leading this project. And for Andrew, Guayule's humble appearance is not a problem.
What's interesting about Guayule is that it produces an insane amount of rubber. It stocks up a lot of rubber in its stems.
The stems can have 6 or 8% rubber. Not bad for a dusty desert shrub.
And Guayule has a bunch of advantages that could make it cost-effective and more sustainable in the long run.
Unlike the rubber tree, there are different lines of Guayule, so it has more potential for genetic diversity, which means more defense against disease.
It's native to a hot desert area, northern Mexico to the southwestern U.S. That means more resilience against climate change.
Plus, Guayule grows with less water than many row crops like alfalfa or corn,
making it a more sustainable crop for farmers in desert areas.
And harvesting Guayule isn't labor-intensive the way tapping rubber trees is. You can cut stalks and stems from a bunch of shrubs at once, with help from machines.
So it's a shrub that solves a lot of the rubber tree's problems.
In addition, when the rubber has been extracted from these plants, you can actually use what's left over as kind of a natural biofuel.
So you could grow Guayule, then process it into two renewable products, rubber and also chemicals.
Wow, the wonder shrub Guayule.
Dreamy.
People have used the Guayule plant throughout history. I looked into that for a piece I wrote for Hudson Alpha's blog, Everyday DNA.
Linked in the show notes.
So let's start with the first time Guayule shows up in Western records. That's in the 1500s, when colonizers from Spain noticed Aztec people playing with rubber balls made from Guayule.
And Guayule has actually been mass-produced before, right?
Yeah, in the early 1900s it was. Industrialists like John D. Rockefeller created a firm to turn Guayule into rubber. They harvested wild Guayule from Mexico, and it kind of worked. We used a lot less rubber then, but by 1910, about half of all U.S. rubber was from that wild Guayule.
Wild Guayule is quite the tongue twister. At this point, it sounds like growing Guayule is kind of catching on.
But then, between Mexico's revolutions and over-harvesting that wild Guayule, that all fizzled out.
Ah.
And there was actually another time where lots of people worked on making rubber from Guayule. World War II. The U.S. got cut off from sourcing rubber from Asia after Japan seized rubber plantations, so Congress funded something called the Emergency Rubber Project. During that project, researchers planted and grew over 32,000 acres of Guayule.
So the goal was to work out how to farm a domestic, natural source of rubber.
Right. But the push for that project ended with the war. Once we could get natural rubber from Asia again, that's what we did.
So no one has really figured out how to grow Guayule so that it makes enough rubber to be a large-scale, profitable crop.
No, but understanding this plant better could change that. If these researchers can figure out how Guayule makes rubber, they could boost its rubber production and still keep all those other strengths Guayule brings to the table.
So as with many projects at the JGI and Hudson Alpha, researchers are aiming for better understanding in the form of genomics. Here's Andrew Nelson again.
So with Bridgestone, David Derrick at Bridgestone, Colleen McMahon at USDA, and myself, we spearheaded this proposal for JGI to actually sequence the genomes of these plants.
Historically, it's been hard to sequence Guayule. It's got a really big genome.
But Hudson Alpha and the JGI have the expertise.
And if we want to figure out like what is actually working to turn on the rubber biosynthesis pathway in these plants, and you know, figure out all the molecular components. You know, we really need a genome.
And actually, they're not just stopping at one genome.
They'll sequence and analyze multiple plants.
In just a bit, we'll head back to the greenhouse where we first started out, the one that's growing Waiuli alongside rubber trees. It's Colleen McMahon, the third researcher Andrew Nelson just shouted out, who showed me around there. She showed me the plants that will get sequenced, and she's got lots to say about what the Waiuli genome will let this team do. First, since we made this episode in collaboration with the Hudson Alpha Institute for Biotechnology in Huntsville, Alabama, here's a bit more about their podcast, Tiny Expeditions.
Welcome to Season 4 of Tiny Expeditions, a podcast that explores the tiny science of genetics, DNA, and inheritance.
Our world is facing some of the biggest challenges in history, from climate change and habitat destruction to the emergence of new viruses and other infectious diseases.
But we've got genomic technology on our side. And this season, we'll show you how it's helping us to tackle these issues head on.
Get ready to explore how DNA technology is being used to solve more crimes.
How preserving peat bogs is crucial in our quest to quell climate change.
Or how scientists are working to prepare for future novel pandemics, and much, much more.
We've got an exciting lineup of guests, including some of the world's leading scientists, who will share their insights with us.
I'm Chris Powell, and this season, I'll be your storytelling guide.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Sharman, here to help you make sense of the science and answer all of your questions along the way.
And together, we'll take you behind the scenes. We'll go into the lab and explore the real-world impacts of groundbreaking genetics research.
So come along with us on this adventure, and let's ask the big questions about the tiny science that shapes our world.
Look out for the new season coming in March. It's available on all of your favorite podcast apps.
To recap where we've been so far, right now, we rely on pretty much only one way to make natural rubber, the rubber tree, Hevea brasiliensis.
But it's also a tree that's up against disease and climate change.
So researchers are trying to find other rubber-producing plants, and the Waiuli shrub is a great candidate.
It grows in a harsh desert climate.
It's easier to harvest.
And it's got more genetic diversity than the rubber tree.
Yeah, and I actually saw some of that diversity firsthand.
So cool. Set the scene for us.
So this is back at the USDA greenhouse that we started this episode with. It's a pretty big rooftop greenhouse in Albany, California. Plenty of sunlight comes in. Colleen McMahon is showing me around. She's a research chemist at the USDA who's also part of this project. So we're in the greenhouse and she wheels out a cart with three different potted Waiuli plants.
There are three different Waiuli varieties in the initial phase of the project. And the three plants you see right here are those three plants.
They're all little potted shrubs about the size of a basketball, but they look different by eye. One is a dustier green, more like a sage plant, and another is a much brighter green, think like basil. And the third is somewhere right in between those two.
And I'd bet their differences go beyond their color.
Right, here's Colleen.
They're quite different genetically as well, and so the information that we get from those plants will be huge.
Overall, they want to understand how to get Waiuli to make more rubber, but it's also important to keep its other good qualities intact. So the idea is to look at a handful of plants and see the genetics between a variety of strengths.
Okay, to get a better picture overall.
Right. These plants each produce different amounts of rubber and have unique disease resistance.
Nice.
Those are the broad strokes. But I want to get just a little more specific about these plants, actually.
Let's do it.
Okay, so these plants are actually very different in specific ways. It turns out, the greenest plant I saw is quite different from the other two. The ones that were more sagey green.
Okay, one that's different, two that are more similar. Following so far.
Great, so let's start with that greener plant. It's a diploid plant, so it's got two sets of chromosomes, and it reproduces by crossing with other plants. Chen Dong is a researcher who works with Colleen, and she told me the reason they want to look at that plant is...
So we can just have a pure genome of a Waiuli.
So just a clear, complete genome. This is like our basic version of Waiuli.
And what about the other two plants?
This is where our picture gets even more technical. The ones that are dustier green, that are more similar in color, they reproduce asexually. They're both tetraploid plants, which means they've got four copies of their chromosomes.
So double the chromosomes of our first plant.
Yes.
These are the ones that Bridgestone use for breeding.
Bridgestone is interested in diploid plants too, but these two lines are specifically part of their breeding program. And each of these tetraploid plants are important to this study for their own reasons. The plant that's the most sagey green, it's the smallest, but it produces a bunch of rubber.
Seems like a great plant to work with in this quest to crank up rubber production.
Yeah, and the other tetraploid plant is interesting for a different reason. They've already figured out how to edit its genes.
So we can genetically transform the plant. We've had success with doing that with a number of genes and in entire pathways in a couple of cases.
So they're already able to tweak this plant.
Right. The question is just which tweaks to make, for example, to boost the pathway that produces rubber.
And that's where all of JGI and Hudson Alpha's genomic information comes in.
Exactly. Beyond just getting the sequence of Waiuli's genome, JGI and Hudson Alpha will help this team work out which genes are there, how they're turned on and off, and what they do.
Lots of information about how Waiuli makes rubber.
And Colleen and Chen will get even more information from editing this line of plants. They'll be able to find important genes, then basically delete them with CRISPR gene editing to see exactly how important they are.
We want to confirm the functionality of these genes that we use CRISPR to knock down these genes and see what is happening in these plants.
So cool.
Right, but Colleen did point out, even though these greenhouse studies will give them a ton of information, there's actually still more to the story.
So there's a really important genetic by environment component for Waiuli. And that's one of the areas that we're studying in this project is what happens to gene expression as the environment changes. And we're really excited about having the opportunity to look at that.
So Waiuli growing in a controlled greenhouse will do things differently than Waiuli growing outside in a field.
Which brings us to our last researcher of this episode. He's with Bridgestone, growing Waiuli in the field.
So I'm Mark Cruz. I'm a plant breeder at Bridgestone Americas in Eloy, Arizona.
Mark works with Bridgestone at its research farm in Arizona. It's 281 acres of these hardy Waiuli shrubs. Picture, green shrubs, about a foot tall, filed in organized rows in the dirt.
A whole club of shrubs.
That farm grows Waiuli for lots of projects. For this project, Mark is growing the same three lines of plants as Colleen and Chen. So he'll be able to compare these field samples with their greenhouse plants and see what changes outdoors.
So knowing the gene expression patterns and how those correlate to rubber production will really help. So our goal is to determine those gene expressions at the different locations. And maybe in the future, we can link it to protein expression levels too.
Like Colleen and Chen, they'll take a look at the genes that help Waiuli make rubber. Mark is also interested in making Waiuli a hardier crop, one that more farmers can grow in more places. So he's also looking at the genes that make this shrub cold tolerant.
That sounds like it means even more testing.
Exactly. Besides that farm in Eloy, they're growing Waiuli in two other field spots for even more comparison. So all in all, Mark and his team are growing these strains in three places outside.
Salinas, Parlier, California, and in Eloy, Arizona. So basically I'm responsible for the field trials. And then we send the tissues to Cornell and Boyce Thompson.
So by Cornell, Mark means he sends his samples over to Andrew Nelson.
Right, the plant biologist at the Boyce Thompson Institute, who told us a bit about Waiuli earlier in this episode.
So Andrew's lab will help analyze those samples. The JGI and Hudson Alpha will help too.
Ah, we've come all the way full circle. Must be nearly time to end this episode.
Yep, I think we've just about covered it. We've gone from trouble with the rubber tree to the Waiuli shrub that could help.
And we've seen how this team will use greenhouse plants, field trials, and a whole bunch of analysis to understand the genes that matter for growing Waiuli and boosting its rubber content.
To grow a reliable, sustainable version of rubber that also supports biofuels.
So Sarah, now that we're pretty much done, I realize I've waited this entire episode to bring something else up.
Okay.
In terms of naming, so I know we talked Waiuli, but like, it's a shrub that can make rubber. So do you think that this new version of rubber should be called shrubber?
Maybe. Seems like it's past time to read the credits. Tiny Expeditions is a production of the Hudson Alpha Institute for Biotechnology, a nonprofit research institution located in Huntsville, Alabama.
Genome Insider is a production of the Joint Genome Institute, a user facility of the U.S. Department of Energy Office of Science located at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab in Berkeley, California.
This episode was written and produced by Manika Wilhelm.
Ashley Papp reported the interviews with researchers Dave Dierig, Mark Cruz, Chen Dong, and Colleen McMahon.
AJ Bushy reported the interview with Andrew Nelson.
We had production help from Chris Powell, Massey Ballin, Allison Joy, Ingrid Okert, and Graham Rutherford. If you like this episode, help someone else find it. Tell them about it, send a link over, or leave us a review wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time!